And he called me on Tuesday and said, you know, my father may not die of natural causes. So, and this son is actually a doctor. So it doesn't matter what you are, who you are. You still have that incredible emotional, and he was serious, I hate to tell you. And then another client, he's an engineer, really dry sense of humor, and he said, you want to make plans standing versus being on the stretcher, being carried out. So for him, he wanted to make plans while he knew what he was doing, and he had options, versus, you know, if you have a stroke and the paramedics come, take you to the hospital, you know, you don't have a lot of time to figure out what to do. So there are many approaches to coming up with a long-term care solution. And what they say is that you need two things. One is you need quality information, and then you need to know how to apply it to yourself. That's why I say, think about what worries you most, and that will be your objective for your plan. Look at your options, and then see how what options, one or two options, fit with helping you alleviate that worry. So what I'd like to do is, does everybody have a handout? I want to go through a few pages here, and my goal is to give you a broad overview of long-term care, touch on Medicare, go over Medi-Cal, and then how the insurance policies work, and then tell you about how some legislation fits in with this. So if you turn to the first page, there are three kinds of care that we could have. We could have medical care, long-term care, and hospice care. Everybody understands medical care and hospice care, right? Short-term care, and you go to the doctor, you go to the hospital for medical care, and if you need hospice care, that means your doctor says you're terminally ill, and the objective is not to make you better, but to make you comfortable. Your health insurance, Medicare, and your Medicare supplement plan pays for medical care and your hospice care. If you need long-term care, then the objective is to help you with your activities throughout the day, help you function. It means that you have a chronic disability. You have an illness that's going to last for a long time. And you could need this care suddenly because you had an accident, you have a sudden serious illness, or you have a debilitating problem that's been coming on, it's gradually coming on. In medical care and hospice care, you still, you know, you're intervening with your doctor. Your doctor, you know, helps you figure out what to do. With long-term care, you need your doctor too. And the definition is when your doctor says that you need help with at least two of a list of six activities of daily living, and you're going to need this care for a long time, which is 90 days or longer. So you physically need somebody to be there, or you need someone to just be near you to make sure you're safe, you're not falling. So either you need help with your activities or you have a cognitive problem, like memory loss, disorientation, problems with reasoning. So this definition is how the policies define how you're eligible for your insurance benefits now. And there was a law that was passed in 1996 called HIPAA, and you know about HIPAA, probably because when you go to the doctor that you sign a privacy notice. No. Well, HIPAA did other things. And HIPAA is Health Insurance Portability Accountability Act. So HIPAA said that if the long-term care insurance policies trigger benefits this way, then your premium can be tax deductible under certain situations. So since 1997, just about all the policies will trigger your benefits this way. You need help with two of six activities of daily living or you have a cognitive problem. And this definition, by the way, was defined in the 60s by a doctor. So it wasn't just made up by the federal government. There was some basis for this. You can receive care at home, in your assisted living facility, in a nursing facility, adult daycare center. And 90% of the people need care at home. Most people, when you read the articles about long-term care, they talk about nursing home statistics, and nursing home costs a lot. But that's a very small sliver of the population. Almost everybody is at home taking care, being cared for. And the only kind of insurance that pays for people and other services to help you in your home or an assisted living or nursing facility is long-term care insurance. If you don't have long-term care insurance, then you pay for your care yourself. And then as you use up your money, you can go on state aid, which is called Medi-Cal, which we'll go over in a moment. The cost of care, you know, needing care is one thing, but we don't have big families anymore to take care of us. Women are in the workplace, so we don't have a female at home taking care of people. And so we rely on other people to take care of us, and we have to pay for them. The cost is running about $250 a day. So $7,500 a month. It can be less, it can be more, but that's a significant extra expense when you have your regular, you know, daily, monthly expenses. Okay, next page, page two. Medicare and Medicare supplement plans, same with your health insurance. They don't pay for long-term care, as a friend of mine said, even if you want them to. They don't pay for them. So Medicare and Medicare supplement plans are designed to pay for care at your doctor, your hospital, when you're rehabilitating. They will pay for some care in a nursing home up to 100 days. But I don't know if you know this. Most people do know. You have to be in the hospital first for at least 3 days and then go to be discharged to a nursing facility. But you have to have skilled care every single day in order for Medicare and your Medicare supplement plans to pick it up. My dad had a stroke a month ago. So he went into the hospital. They sent him to a rehab center after that. I think he was in the hospital for a week. And he had so much pain in his head, and he was so dizzy, he couldn't get up. So he could not do his physical therapy. And they said they're not going to pay for it. So he was in a rehab center with intense pain, couldn't do his physical therapy every day. So Medicare does not pay for it. So they're out of pocket for that. So I told Dad, I said, you have to do physical therapy at least 3 hours a day. So anyway, it took him a couple weeks, but now he's able to do it. For home care, Medicare and Medicare supplement plans pay. I have about two hourly visits weekly. Sometimes it's more, but still, it's just a few hours a week. It's to make sure you're getting better. You have to need skilled care, and you have to be homebound. And residential care facility for the elderly is the term in California. Most people recognize assisted living facility. It's the same thing. They don't cover assisted living facility because medical care, and it's not designed for medical and rehabilitation care. Okay. The next page is really important. This is about Medi-Cal. And a lot of people don't understand what you have to spend down or what you can keep in order to go on Medi-Cal. So Medi-Cal in California only pays for your care in a nursing home. And they have income and asset limits, which means if you're unmarried, you can keep $35 a month of income for personal expenses, and you can keep $2,000 of assets. You can keep your home. I know that's the comment that most people say, like, oh, my God. You can keep your home normally. You can keep your home. But there is a law that was passed called the Deficit Reduction Act. If you think about the terms of the legislation, deficit reduction, reduce the deficit, right? So what it's saying, it's not enacted yet, but what it's saying is that if your equity of your home is over $750,000, you have to spend anything over $750,000. You have to spend that down. So you can only keep your house if your equity is $750,000. So you have to sell your house, buy a smaller house, or sell the house and use the money up. So that hasn't been enacted yet, but it's been passed. So they expect it to be enacted next year, 2011. And same with a married person in a nursing home. The spouse, though, on Medi-Cal has a monthly income limit as well. An asset amount, they can keep one car and one home. So what if the spouse who's at home passes away? Well, then there's an asset that can be used for the other spouse's care. So the home has to be sold, the assets have to be used up before the spouse who's in the nursing home can continue on Medi-Cal. Now, there's an asterisk next to the $2,000. So what that means is that if you have a special long-term care policy, and in California it's called the California Partnership Program for Long-Term Care, then the state of California is partnering with you and with the insurance company. A handful of insurance companies sell this product. And what it says is that if you have a long-term care policy, a dedicated amount of money from the policy to go towards your long-term care, and you use it up for your care, you can apply for Medi-Cal, and you can keep a portion of your assets. You can keep more than $2,000. The amount you can keep is a dollar of your assets for every dollar of benefits that you received. So if you had a policy that paid out $500,000 towards your care, and then it was used up, so there's no more insurance benefits, and you still needed care, you could apply for Medi-Cal, and you could keep $500,000 of assets. Now, if you have more than that, you have to use it up. And the term is spend down. You have to spend down until that amount. And just another note about the partnership plan. For years and years and years, there were only four states that had the partnership plan. It has recently expanded to almost every state now has a partnership program for long-term care. Because what are they saying? They want each individual to take responsibility, personal and fiscal responsibility for their long-term care by doing their part. By doing something. And they will help you by letting you protect assets in the event that you have to go on Medi-Cal. Okay. Next page. Covered expenses. There's two kinds of policies out there. There's a comprehensive policy and there's a facility-only policy. So facility-only policy, of course, is pretty clear. It just covers facilities. Comprehensive policy includes home care expenses and also adult daycare centers. Facility-only policies are less expensive than the comprehensive policies, obviously, right? But just because someone buys a facility-only policy doesn't mean they're destined to go into a nursing home, because it covers assisted living facilities as well and Alzheimer's facilities. So that can be appropriate for people who don't have their own home. They rent, or maybe they're older, or their home is not set up for a potential caregiver. So maybe a facility-only policy might be appropriate for them. And then the fifth page goes over the primary components of a long-term care policy. Each policy has a base plan, riders meaning you can put extra benefits on your policy for an extra premium, and it includes features in the policy that's standard maybe to that one insurance company. and also a premium. So under the base plan, there's four features here, or four parts. The first part is an elimination period. So these are the variables that you have to choose for your own planning purposes if you decide to have long-term care insurance. So the elimination period is the number of days that you will pay for your care yourself or manage the care yourself before the policy starts paying you for your care. And the longer you wait, of course, the lower the premium. Now, I have another client who went on claim, meaning she's collecting her benefits. She had a policy that had a 5-day elimination period. So she had to be out of pocket for 5 days. She was mad. So you want to keep that in mind. She was mad she had to pay for 5 days. So we have to take that into consideration. You have to make sure you have enough, money, or you earmark some assets to pay for that period of care. The daily benefit, you can choose between $50 and $500 a day, typically in $10 increments. And what this means is that once you need care, the insurance company is going to reimburse you up to this fixed amount. Most companies now, most insurance companies, instead of limiting you to a daily amount, will give you a monthly figure to work with. So if you have $250 daily benefit, then you can actually use $7,500 anytime throughout the month. So you can go over the $250 a day, but you just can't go over the $7,500 a month to be reimbursed for your expenses. The benefit period is, just to keep it simple, it's the length of time the daily benefit is going to be paid out to you if you use that amount every single day. So if you have a 6-year benefit, so really the benefit period is as actually a multiplier. So if you have a 6-year benefit, then what the insurance company is saying is that we will put aside for you the $250 a day times the number of days in 6 years, times 6 years, and that amount is what we are liable to you to pay for your care at a rate of $250 a day. So if you use it $250 every single day, it will last 6 years. If you use $250 a day every other day, it would last 12 years. So you're actually insuring yourself for a pool of money that will last a minimum of the benefit period. Okay, and that's where we get to the maximum total benefit. It's the daily benefit times the days in the benefit period. So that example, 250 times 365 days times 6 years is $547,500. If you have a partnership plan and you use up all that money and still need care, you can apply for Medi-Cal and keep that $547,500 in assets. If you did not have a partnership plan and you use up your policy, then you would have to spend down your money down to $2,000 before you could go on Medi-Cal. The other points in the other components, the riders. Every policy has to include an inflation factor that you can purchase as an option, and every policy must give you the option to buy what's called non-forfeiture benefits. And a lot of people don't know what that means, but every policy is required to include these two. Non-forfeiture benefits means that if you should cancel your policy later on, you do not forfeit all your benefits. You would still keep your benefits equal to the premiums that you paid in. Okay. There are other riders that you can include: restoration of benefits, meaning the benefits are restored. If you use some of your benefits and then get better, the insurance company will restore your benefits back to the whole amount, and etc. Under features, Every insurance company includes certain features. Waiver of premium, so you don't have to pay the premium once you start collecting benefits. Respite care, time off for a family member who's taking care of you so you can hire some paid care. And bed reservation, which means that if you're in a facility and need to go to the hospital, you can still use your benefits to reserve your bed in the facility, reserve your place. A lot of the insurance companies, because home care is so common, so many people need care at home, a lot of the features include items that are related to home care, like you could also use your dollars to modify your home to make it easier to be home. You could use your dollars to buy medical equipment. And you could use your dollars, for instance, to train some family caregivers to make sure they understand how to do the procedure correctly. And then, of course, the premium. The premium is based on the choices that you make, based on your age. So it's always better to buy insurance earlier versus later. Based on your health. So most people would get a rate that the general population would get, but if your health is better, then you might be able to get a discounted rate. And other discounts. If both spouses buy a policy, then you could get a spouse discount. In some companies, if you have two family members living in the same residence, then they can get a discount as well. You can pay your premium annually, semi-annually, quarterly, monthly, or you can pay a larger sum up front for a shorter period of time, and then it's paid up. You don't have to pay any more premiums after a period of time. So that's how a partnership plan works, and also a conventional policy, one that's not a partnership plan, works. And there's another kind of policy out there too, and it's called a hybrid policy. And you don't have a page on that. But I was hoping everybody would have a pen. So I thought what you could do is put... So there's two kinds of hybrid policies. There's an annuity policy with long-term care benefits, and there is a life insurance policy with long-term care benefits. And so I'll give you an example, and what I was going to suggest was that putting the word annuity over here with long-term care and life insurance over here. And I'll give you an example. For an annuity, let's say you have put $100,000 into an annuity plan with long-term care benefits. Then you could, if you needed care, there's a built-in long-term care policy. So what it would say is if you needed care, you would have $300,000 for your $100,000 to use for your care. You would have a 90-day elimination period, and in this one example, it would last 6 years. You would have about $4,200 a month for a 6-year period. Now, there was a law that was passed in January 1st, Pension Protection Act. And what it says is that if you have an existing long annuity, so you have money in annuity, let's say you put $80,000 in annuity, it's grown to $100,000. Normally, if you took that money out, you'd be taxed on the gain, $20,000. But the new law says you can transfer your $100,000 into this new hybrid plan, and then if you needed care, you could actually take the gain out tax-free as long as you use it for your care. And you also you've multiplied your dollars, so you have a larger dedicated amount for your long-term care. So that's an annuity. The life insurance with long-term care is similar. Let's take an example of you put $100,000 in the life insurance plan, and the amount you get is going to be based on your age and whether you're a female or male. So let's say you're a female and you're 64. You put $100,000 into this policy. So normally you would, normally you're saying, oh, if I need care, oh, I'm going to use this $100,000. Instead, you put it in this policy, and it creates a death benefit of $170,000. So if you die and don't need care, your heirs get $170,000 tax-free. But if you needed care, in this situation, she would have $512,000 to use for her long-term care, tax-free. And again, that also has a 90-day waiting period, limitation period. So there are many alternatives to use and options for your long-term care planning. Just to recap, the main thing I would say is to think about what worries you most. That would be the thing that creates your objective, your goal for why you're planning for your care. And then look at your options and see which option, because it could be more than one or two options, to help satisfy that goal and objective. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Denise. Don't sit down.
Okay.
With a topic like this, I can't imagine anybody would have a question. It's so simple. But that's not true. We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you're listening to Denise Michaud, and her topic is what baby boomers need to know about long-term care insurance. I'm sure there are many questions, Denise, so shall we start now?
Sure.
All right, and Candice will pass the microphone for those who have questions so we can hear them on the tape.
That's fine. I'm curious about the number and the prevalence or prominence of providers. Are there one? Are there 100? And who are the main players in this activity?
Well, there's the providers would be the assisted living facilities, the nursing facilities, and the home care agencies. And the home care agency field is growing. I don't know exactly how many there are, but since we have so many people who are receiving care at home, there's a big demand for home care.
Let me follow up, and that's the physical. I'm talking about the financial providers.
Oh, in terms of the insurance? Are you talking about the insurance companies? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, there's many, many insurance companies that sell long-term care insurance. There's only a handful, I think there's five, that sell the California Partnership Plan. There's only a handful that sell the annuity, the hybrid policies, the annuity with long-term care, and the life insurance with long-term care. But there might be more than 50 companies that sell long-term care insurance, you know, conventional long-term care insurance. I think it's always good to compare like 3 to 5 companies so that you get a really good overview of what nuances are differ from one company to another, and you get sort of a good, you know, just a good overview of what's available, what your options are. I don't think you have to do, you know, compare 20 companies, but I think 3 to 5 is good.
Denise, the topic of riders, is there an inflation rider available, and if so, is that inflation calculated at the general rate of inflation or at the cost of care inflation?
That's a good question. So every insurance company has to include an inflation rider of 5% compounding. And actually the last page shows you an example of, I think, $250 increasing by 5% compound. But many companies offer other inflation choices. One would be 5% simple. So that means that your daily benefit would increase by a flat 5% every year. And then another inflation option would be the CPI, Consumer Price Index, which is like 3 to 4%, which is below the inflation rate of long-term care. Long-term care has been going up almost 5% a year on average. So when you're doing your planning, inflation's really important because you want to have your benefit keep in step with the cost of care as much as possible, as much as you can. Yes.
Oh, sorry. Denise, can you talk a little bit about the cost of premiums versus age? In other words, obviously the younger you are, the lower the premiums, the older, the higher. And at what point does it become too expensive and too prohibitive? At what age, and how do you do those kinds of calculations?
Right. Well, whenever I meet someone, we take the age in consideration, the financials in consideration, the health, you know, everything into consideration. And most insurance companies don't insure someone over 85, meaning that they won't take an application, right? But of course, if you, as you get older, your policy stays in force naturally. So I guess most people in their 40s or 50s, what would be appropriate, and maybe even the 60s, would be a conventional policy or a partnership policy. In the late 60s and 70s, it might be good to look at a smaller conventional policy and partnership policy and maybe a hybrid policy. So usually in your late 60s, 70s, sometimes a combination of these policies work better. Once you're older and you're retired, you have, you have your assets set, you know what your income is, you know what assets can be discretionary. And so we can plan based on if you can move some discretionary money into a hybrid plan and then provide some dollars that way without really coming up with a large annual premium.
Hi. I have two quick questions. First of all, in California, do you know the percentage of people that actually purchase? I mean, do a lot of people have long-term care insurance?
You know, I don't have that percentage, but I probably could find it out.
Because all my friends talk about it, but yeah. I don't think anybody's
done it. And it's definitely growing. And probably the marketplace that's growing the most is the employer market. It's the second most requested employee benefit. And you think medical and retirement planning would be the first two, but because everyone has medical insurance, that's not a requested benefit. So retirement planning and then long-term care planning, because as employees are getting older, they're seeing their parents, they see how much time it takes to, you know, handle their parents, and it affects the workplace.
Great. And another question. Your talk was great. We got a lot of information, and now I'm probably more confused. Mm-hmm. But are there people that a person can pay to help them look at the different options rather than trying to do this all on their own?
Right. You can pay a fee if you want. I mean, I have charged a fee if people, you know, want to look at the different policies and make sure it's objective, you know. And I have to say, in, you know, being in this industry for a long time, it really does come down to the individual, you know, where the individual can be objective with you and transparent with you. And most of the people in our industry are. Okay. But you can pay a fee and get that analysis. And then you can purchase a policy from that person or not. And then if the person, you know, helps you purchase a policy, then they can get a commission, pay you back the fee. You know, there's ways to arrange that. Okay.
There's also continuing care communities that you can buy into.
Yes.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about that in contrast to what you've described so far?
Well, that could be one of the options, or an option for people in their, when they plan for their long-term care, is they may want to buy in to a community environment where the care is provided for the rest of their life, like the Towers and the Sequoias, two representatives from them. So it's definitely, you know, that's an option. It's not an option for everyone, but it's definitely an option. I have a client now who didn't know what he was going to do because his wife passed away. And he wasn't ready to make a decision. But he wanted to do some planning, and so he bought a long-term care policy. And now the next step is to see which retirement community he wants to be in.
So some of the continuing care communities would accept the long-term care policy, and I think some of them don't, right?
Yes. It really depends on the contract. You know, you have to look at the individual communities to see where the policy fits in, and maybe it doesn't fit in, and he may not need to keep his policy anymore.
On this list that you talked about, inflation rider, and that is for the amount that's paid as the benefit, right?
That's based on the, in that example, a daily benefit that you purchase. Right. I think I used $250, right?
So I bought a policy 10 years ago. It's a long-term insurance.
Yeah.
And each year, the premium's gone up. So I'm wondering if there's
each year?
Well, maybe 2 or 3 years, but then it'll go up quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if, two questions. One is, are there policies that are capped, or can you decide that when you get the policy? And two, is there a way to transfer the money that you've already paid to another policy, maybe?
You can't transfer the money to another policy. And we've seen rate increases on almost every company now. Not every company, but almost. So we have to build in the fact that you might have a rate increase, I would say, a couple of times in your lifetime at least. But there definitely were companies that priced the policy too low. And in our business, we kind of knew that. We know that, those companies. And the financials of those companies were usually low, too. And unfortunately, so that's a practice that the Department of Insurance is has been looking into for years and regulating insurance companies so they don't lowball the premiums to buy the business, and then there's not enough premium to pay the claims. So unfortunately, we've had a couple of companies like that.
Hi. You mentioned that long-term care insurance is requested, more and more requested by employees at their companies. But let's say you're 50 years old, you work for a company that gives you long-term care insurance, you plan to work till you're 65, but we also know that the younger you are when you get it, the cheaper it will be. So wouldn't it be wise, even if you have it through your employer, to be considering getting it on your own at that earlier age?
I think it's always important to compare what you are eligible for. So if you're eligible for a plan from your company, and usually if you buy a company, a plan from an employer, you can continue it if you leave. So that's not really an issue. However, some plans that are offered to employers are have a lot of riders in there that you don't really, you're paying for, but you don't really need, and you have less home care benefits. It's usually structured where you have an X amount for nursing home care and less for assisted living and even less for home care. And usually employer plans don't offer inflation right away. They'll offer it later, but then it will cost more increasingly over the years. So it's important to get that kind of information, you know, good information. And I always recommend that whatever you're eligible for, you compare with an individual policy as well. Because you want to make an educated decision.
As a sheer coincidence, I looked into last year and asked for AARP to give me, you know, an estimate, and I was contacted, and I said, well, I really didn't have a lot of income, and, you know, check with me, you know, this year. I got a call around 12:30 today, just before I was going to come to this meeting, and she said, well, that would be great, and then after that, she would come to my house and we would talk. I'm not necessarily asking you for any recommendation. Obviously, I would then take AARP, whatever she gives me, and she said be perfectly happy to plug in some numbers for me. So it looks like I'm going to get this, you know, without any kind of a fee, just because obviously if I go with this lady, she'll get a commission for whatever they sell.
Right.
Now, can you say anything about what AARP sells or recommends versus other companies?
So AARP sells I'm pretty sure it's through Genworth. They have limited choices on what you can purchase. You can go online and plug in your birth date and different choices, and you can see what the premium is. And again, I just highly recommend that you look at whatever you are eligible for and you're considering, but look at a scope instead of just one. Because if you look at just one, you have no idea if that's a good value or not. You're looking for value, with a good company. Yes.
My question is, has anyone or is there available with the Department of Insurance or with Consumer Reports, for instance? I have two questions, actually. This is the first. Has anyone done that kind of comparative analysis that would be available for people to review?
Let's see. I'm trying to think if there is. I'd like to do my own, but I'm going to say I don't think there is to have companies side by side, each nuance for, how each component works from one company to another company. It's very confusing to find, if you look at the legislation and the general information on the Department of Insurance, you'd have to really understand what you're reading, to get it. I mean, all the information is there, but it's all over the place. So all the policies have to work a certain way, right? This way. And outside of this box, then you're going to have, every policy is going to have their little differences and nuances. So, for example, on the elimination period, one company, if you have a 60-day elimination period, let's say, one company says you have to have a service every day. Every day you have a service is going to count towards that 60 days. What if you don't, so you have to incur an expense but from a non-family member? Right? If you don't incur an expense every day, let's say you incur an expense every other day, it's going to take 120 days to satisfy that elimination period, right? Other companies will say, once your doctor says you need this care, that starts the clock. On the 61st day, you're eligible for benefits. So there's two ways the policies work, and I don't know if there's anywhere you can see, unless an agent like me or broker like me can tell you this is how one company defines, each component, and this is how the other company. I'll tell you how I do it. I compare five companies, and we talk about what's important to you, compare the companies, and we have to start somewhere, right? So, basically apples to apples, same daily benefit period per company. And then I put them in order from lowest premium to highest. So you want to only look at good companies, highly rated companies. And then we say, for the first company, the lowest premium, how does this policy work? So this is how it works. The next company costs more. What does this company give you that's different for the extra premium? Does it give you anything different? And if it doesn't, we can toss that out. And then we just keep going, So we analyze it that way. But first, I want you to know how each policy has to work a certain way, and then we just have to know what the differences are between one company to another.
What might a fee for that kind of analysis with you cost? Is there a sort of a general fee?
I've never charged a fee, but I probably should come up with one. I don't know. Maybe a financial planner might, I don't know, maybe $500. But usually I like to do that. I can do that for you for no fee, and then you can see if you want to work with me.
Denise, could you explain what a California partnership long-term care policy is, and how is it different than conventional policy, and how do you get it?
The main difference between the two is the asset protection. So the California Partnership Plan is a plan where the state of California is partnering with you to say, if you need to go on Medi-Cal, you can protect a portion of your assets. And the portion that you can protect is based on the amount of benefits that you received. A dollar of benefits you received equals a dollar of assets you can protect. So that's the primary reason. The insurance company has to keep records of how much they're paying you because they have to eventually give it to Medi-Cal if you ever go on Medi-Cal. And a handful of companies sell this policy, the partnership policy. They also sell a non-partnership policy. And they work the same, except one has that asset protection. And the premium with this, you know, if you're looking at the same company, is going to be the same. It should be the same, or about the same. It's supposed to be the same. Because that's the rule. The Department of Health and Human Services oversees the partnership plan. The rule is, if you sell a partnership plan, it's going to be the same premium as a non-partnership plan.
No, but why would anybody not get the California partnership plan?
I don't understand why somebody would not get the California partnership plan if
because
it has that
asset
protection.
So what if what's appropriate for you is you want to have lifetime coverage. It will never run out. You will never go on Medi-Cal. That's the plan. Then you can look at other policies that don't sell partnership plan that sell lifetime coverage, because the planning is that, because if you have lifetime coverage with a partnership plan, you ideally never go on Medi-Cal because your benefits will never run out. When you have a finite amount of benefits, that's when it's probably more important to look at a partnership plan.
I have a two-part question. The first one is, the first part is, in a married couple, one spouse determines that they really need some help and it's time to go on claim. That's great to know that the money will be rolling in, but who is it that actually provides the services that the person needs, whether it's someone to come in and help with the bathing or the feeding or the whatever?
Typically, unfortunately, the spouse or a family member usually gets in there and starts providing care, and they get worn out or physically hurt. And then we start the bent the claim on the policy. So unfortunately, that happens too often. I think right now, most of the people who are taking care of people at home are probably family members. But more and more people are hiring people from home care agencies or independent caregivers to come to the home and provide care for them. And that's a lot safer, from what I've seen in my experience, than having family members do all the caregiving. Family members, they become exhausted, they're resentful, they become physically hurt, and their health goes down the tubes. So it's healthier to have an outside home care agency, for instance.
Well, I'm assuming in this instance that there is no family around.
Okay.
So let's say this first spouse who needed the care, gone. Now we have the second person living alone, and
okay,
they get to the point where they really need to invoke the long-term care and get the help. What essentially triggers that normally? Is it the housekeeper or the postman or the milkman? Who is it who finally says, this person's got to go?
That's exactly what happens. Someone says, I think you should get somebody in there to help you. Usually it's somebody, a friend, a neighbor, if not a family member. But what I suggest everybody have is a power of attorney, someone who is your advocate, someone who's checking in on you, making sure you're okay. and cognizant of things that are changing, and you want to have a good open discussion with your power of attorney, because if something does happen, you want to have an agreement that it's okay for that person to call upon help. And because if you get help in earlier than later, you can sometimes avoid a disaster, avoid a crisis, and keep the person's health stable. So I guess the answer is everybody should have an advocate, a power of attorney. And that could be anybody, I guess, right? I guess there's a business in the banks, trustees are handling that if you don't have anybody.
If you're not concerned with a will, and mm-hmm. you're concerned with the quality of residential health care, a facility, and you want an upscale facility, mm-hmm. at what point do you are you assessed at being eligible for that health care? Who makes that determination? And is this policy a type of supplemental so that you're not in a standard health care but you're in an upscale health care facility?
It can be looked at as a supplemental to your income and your assets. It's not a supplemental to Medicare or Medicare supplement plans because that doesn't cover long-term care. Mm-hmm. Or you could look at it another way. You could have long-term care insurance be the primary amount of money that's going to help pay for your care. And who determines it's going to really be you that determine, or your power of attorney that determines where you want to receive care. You might get advice from your doctor. Your doctor might say, oh, you need to be in a nursing home, and you can say, no, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be at home.
So if you decide, well, I'd like to be at Heritage Point in Walnut Creek, mm-hmm. which is a really nice facility, mm-hmm. and I think it's time. Mm-hmm. Will the health care facility debate that, or is that like,
well, they're going to have to screen you to see if you need the care that they provide.
I can't cook. I'm.
So they're going to look at each place is going to look at how you function and whether it's appropriate for you to be there to receive the care.
According to doctors.
Well, they can have some facilities, I believe, have their own assessment. And yes. And you could also, based on a facility, it's going to be, if we're talking about facilities, it's going to be based on probably their own assessment of what you need and whether their care is appropriate for you. The facility's assessment. So the insurance company is going to be paying, your benefit's going to be triggered from your insurance company if you need help with 2 out of 6 ADLs or you have a cognitive problem, 2 out of 6 activities of daily living. And I would say, just to think about your question, too, is a good point person when you need care is to have a care manager name in your back pocket. Because a care manager is a nurse or a social worker who can come and assess your situation and give you advice about what might be appropriate for you. One more? Or no? Okay.
Don't sit down.
Okay.
Right. Unfortunately, we've reached the point in the program where there's time for only one last question. But, Denise, will you stay?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm happy to
and
stay
answer questions.
And answer questions. And I did want to say, can I say one more thing?
Of course.
There's a book that a friend of mine wrote. She's a geriatric care manager.
Yeah.
And it's an excellent book, very easy to read. And I had picked out 2 seats to give this to. And I just asked that if I give it to you, please read it. Read it and pass it on to somebody. I put my card in there. So I picked that seat up first before you even sat down.
While Denise is doing that, I should say that one of the best arguments for long-term care insurance was put forth by Professor Wallace Stegner. Dr. Stegner said, if you're going to get old, you may as well get as old as you can get. And it's best to be able to afford it. All right. One more question.
Oh, one more question.
Hi. I'm in the process of looking at different plans for long-term care. And one of the things that you brought up in talking about the the daily benefit, mm-hmm. as well as whether you should do like 10 years or a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
How does one determine whether 10 years or lifetime? Because no one knows what that future is going to be, and how much money we will all need, 30 years from now for that kind of care.
Well, as far as how much money you're going to need in 30 years, that's too hard to figure out. You have to think about what the cost is now, and then just inflate it, put the inflation on, and expect or anticipate that it will grow in conjunction with how the costs go up. And how do you determine whether you want 10 years or lifetime? If we do an analysis and look at it, some companies you can get lifetime coverage for the same price as 6 years or 10 years. So you're only going to know that unless you look at a broad scope.
Makes sense.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Our thanks to Denise Michaud, for her talk tonight. Thank you, Denise. We also thank our audience here as well as those listening to the recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.